and keep on thinking free.
The most eclectic mix of music in the city that never sleeps. At 99.5 FM WBAI New York. And streaming live at www.wbai.org.
Stay tuned for the Independent News Hour. That's coming up. Stay tuned.
Good evening and welcome to the Independent News Hour. I'm John Tarleton, editor-in-chief of the Independent, New York City's lefty newspaper and website. We're online at independent.org, independent.org. You can also find our May print edition across the city in our red and white news boxes in more than 60 public libraries, as well as independent bookstores, cafes, social movement centers, and other venues. I'm joined by my co-host, Amber Gagarian.
Hi, John. It's great to be here with you and all of our listeners on 99.5 FM and streaming on WBAI.org.
Yes, so we have another packed show today with lots of great guests and topics. In our opening segment, we're going to delve further into the controversy that has struck the CUNY Law School, a law school here in the city that focuses on public interest law. The commencement address that was given in May by Fatima Muhammad set off a lot of criticism because she criticized both the NYPD and Israel and its whole Zionist project. And so we're going to get into that some more. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to talk with an organizer from the Emergency Worker Organizing Committee, EWOC, which has really been in the thick of some amazing labor organizing campaigns as interest in labor unions has surged in the last few years. They've been doing some amazing work, and they have some trainings coming up. We're going to hear about that. But first, we're going to turn to CUNY and the fight for Palestinian liberation. Amba, you've been following this story closely.
Yeah, absolutely. So on May 12th, Fatima Muhammad called out Israel's human rights violations and crimes against Palestinians during her commencement speech at CUNY Law. She was elected to speak by her fellow students. So let's listen to some of selected portions of that speech, and we'll explain more after that.
Like many of you, I chose CUNY School of Law for its articulated mission to be law in the service of human needs. One of very few legal institutions created to recognize that the law is a manifestation of white supremacy that continues to oppress and suppress people in this nation and around the world. In this moment of celebrating who we are, I want to celebrate CUNY Law as one of the few, if not the only law school, to make a public statement defending the right of its students to organize and speak out against Israeli settler colonialism. That this is the law school that passed and endorsed BDS on a student and faculty level. Recognizing that absent a critical imperialism, settler colonialism lens, our work and this school's mission statement is void of value. That as Israel continues to indiscriminately rain bullets and bombs on worshipers, murdering the old, the young, attacking even funerals and graveyards, as it encourages lynch mobs to target Palestinian homes and businesses, as it imprisons its children, as it continues its project of settler colonialism, expelling Palestinians from their homes, carrying the ongoing Nakba, that our silence is no longer acceptable. We are the student body and faculty that fought back when investor-focused admin attempted to cross the BDS picket line, saying loud and clear that Palestine can no longer be the exception to our pursuit of justice, that our morality will not be purchased by investors. And we did all of this in spite of the racism, in spite of the selective activism, the self-serving interests of CUNY Central, an institution that continues to fail us, that continues to train and cooperate with the fascist NYPD, the military, that continues to train IDF soldiers to carry out that same violence globally, a larger institution committed to its donors, not to its students.
Right. So that was Fatima Mohammed speaking on May 12th at the CUNY Law commencement speech. And then in a statement on May 30th, the university categorized her address as hate speech and said they condemned such words. The following day, Mayor Eric Adams denounced her comments as well, saying, quote, if I was on that stage when those comments were made, I would have stood up and denounced them immediately. End quote. On the 1st of June, dozens of CUNY faculty sent a letter to the chancellor and the board of trustees requesting them to withdraw their statement against Mohammed. The CUNY controversy has been the subject of several screaming New York Post cover stories and has drawn the ire of Congress, including from Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Richie Torres, who is a Democrat from the Bronx. Also, Republican Congressman Mike Lawler from Upper State New York, who vowed to craft legislation to strip all federal funding for CUNY. Last night, CUNY students, workers, and other allies disrupted a Board of Trustees meeting. Let's listen to some footage from that.
Shame on the BOT for throwing one of their students under the bus. We are really outraged by the treatment. Fatima, you came in to right-wing press, the New York Post.
Excuse me.
Who do you represent? Not CUNY. This is not what CUNY is about.
Grassroots Palestinian group within our lifetime, known as WOL, has been central in organizing support for Mohammed. The organization launched a campaign called We Stand With Fatima. Now we are joined by Nardine Kiswani, chair of Within Our Lifetime, which Mohammed, Fatima Mohammed, is also a member of. Welcome, Nardine, to WBAI.
Hi, Amba. Thanks for having me and for covering this important story.
It's great to have you here on the Independent News Hour. So, Nardine, you have faced your own fair share of backlash. You also were elected to give a commencement speech at CUNY Law last year. Let's go to a quick clip from that.
I am grateful to all of you, and I know that without you, I would not be here. In fact, there were many moments in the last 3 years where I thought I wasn't going to make it. I've been facing a campaign of Zionist harassment by well-funded organizations with ties to the Israeli government and military on the basis of my Palestinian identity and organizing.
All right, so that was you, Nardine, speaking about not being sure if you were going to be able to give the speech itself because there was such a strong campaign against you once it was announced that you were going to be a speaker. So can you talk a little bit about that and then explain how you and Fatima were actually chosen by your peers to give these addresses?
I'll start with your latter question because it's a little
sure.
easier to
go
answer.
For it.
But like you mentioned, we're elected by our class. So, you know, CUNY Law has a full-time day program and it has a part-time evening program. And Fatima and I were both elected by the full-time day class cohort to be the speakers for their class. So it's not like, you know, some people call us valedictorians. Some people think that like we're elected by the school or invited by the school. No, we're elected by our peers because our peers know exactly what we stand for. And so our speech is not just a reflection of our personal politics, but a reflection of what the graduating class believes in and wants to hear. And, you know, you can tell not just by the fact that they elected us as speakers, but the roaring applause during both speeches. So, you know, I faced a microcosm of what Fatima is facing now last year when I gave my speech before and after I was attacked by Zionist organizations and, you know, donors and funders of those organizations like the Adam Milstein, who runs the Milstein Foundation that funds many of the Zionist organizations that attack Palestinian and other students on campus. And, you know, the type of attacks were the same: Islamophobic, anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, racist, misogynistic, hateful in every way, shape, or form. But of course, Fatima's was amplified even more by the New York Post doing two back-to-back front page covers on this story, and politicians also fanning the flames. What's funny about Eric Adams attacking Fatima is that when he came, we turned our, I was at the graduation, by the way, I watched him give his speech and I watched Fatima give her speech live in person, and people got up and turned their backs to Adams. We booed him. We heckled Free Palestine, but of course that didn't make it into any of the press. Meanwhile, there was roaring applause from every single person for Fatima, not a single detractor. And, you know, nobody said anything negative about the speech for weeks after, until, you know, right-wing organizations and institutions like, and publications like the Post and others attacked her. And of course, the CUNY Board of Trustees engaged in this conversation with the Post by releasing their own statement. They did something on a smaller level to me last year as well. The chancellor of CUNY didn't call it hate speech, but he did say that my views are my own and they don't reflect that of the institution, and that he doesn't support BDS or what I said. So this is just a predictable pattern of CUNY time and time again throwing progressive students under the bus, scrambling to, you know, defend against accusations of anti-Semitism, which are unfounded. Not only by the content of her speech, but also the Jewish Law Student Association that are going to speak later on, so I won't talk about this too much, repeatedly saying that, you know, this is not anti-Semitism. This is not what Jewish students are concerned about. We're actually concerned about the attacks that, you know, Palestinian students are facing. But I think this is just a pattern that's going to continue to repeat itself and get worse if we don't stand up to CUNY to say enough is enough.
Right, Nardine. But within our lifetime and other groups were able to actually push the university to repost or remake public the commencement speeches from this and last year. So tell us more about the We Stand With Fatima campaign and the action to disrupt the Board of Trustees meeting last night and other efforts you'd like to touch on.
Yeah, we had a little more experience this time to put that campaign together, given that we had to mobilize similar efforts last year when city council held a so-called hearing on anti-Semitism, where they name-dropped me. They talked about my speech multiple times. They compared me to the KKK and David Duke, which is absolutely ridiculous. So, you know, we knew to just kind of take from what we did last year to, you know, stand against that, and the broader We Stand With Nardine campaign, which, by the way, Fatima started. That whole campaign was Fatima's.
Wow.
And I just feel so honored to now, you know, have a similar campaign inspired by the same exact one that she started for me, but in her name, We Stand With Fatima, and getting, you know, as much support for it, not just from the CUNY Jewish Law Students Association and SJP at the law school, but also the broader CUNY community. Every single SJP is signed on. We have faculty. We have organizations that, you know, their main issue is not about Palestine, like Rank and File Action, you know, unionizing efforts at CUNY, all of these progressive movements coming together in defense of Fatima, free speech, and Palestine. And we have over 1,000 signatures. I haven't checked it since last night, but every time I check it, it's like, another 100 signatures up, over 1,000 signatures. We have almost every CUNY Law student organization signed onto it, and a lot of community organizations as well that, you know, in the past tried to be a little bit apolitical or didn't talk about these issues, but seeing where that's gotten us, seeing how Arab Muslim women can face such vitriolic hate and violence for speaking up for a cause that we all believe in, really helped people come together for this and say, again, enough is enough.
Right. And the CUNY School of Law Jewish Law Students Association, or JALSA, wrote a letter in support of Fatima on May 21st saying, quote, "It is disingenuous to characterize these factual descriptions as anti-Semitic when they describe the conditions of Palestinian life." To talk more about this, we're joined by Mitchell, a 2021 graduate of CUNY Law and a former member of JALSA who has continued to be involved with the group. Mitchell, welcome to the Independent News Hour.
How's it going?
It's going good. It's great to have you with us and to join this conversation. Can you talk about why JALSA has taken part in the campaign to support Fatima?
For sure. I mean, it's for a few reasons. The first reason is because she's our classmate. She's our friend. We care about her. You know, quite frankly, the racist, Islamophobic, Zionist, misogynist campaign targeting her has been absolutely appalling and unfortunate. And, you know, and the university's decision to add on to that instead of condemning it and protecting their students is disgusting. And you know, our chapter, the Jewish Law Students Association, has been absolutely disgusted by it. But also, you know, we want to clarify as the Jewish Law Students Association, because over the past few weeks of this entire, you know, hate campaign, we've had international and national Zionist organizations. We've had elected officials and public figures and professors at other universities, you know, talking about how this speech and, you know, Palestine organizing at CUNY Law is a threat to the safety of Jewish students and, you know, causes us to be fearful. And, you know, as the actual Jewish students at the school, that couldn't be further from the truth. We love her. That was it, you know, her speech was wonderful and amazing. And it was a speech that many of the students at CUNY Law would have been, you know, happy to give. And she was voted to be the commencement speaker for a reason. And, you know, this idea that, you know, the threat to Jewish safety is coming from our classmate and friend and not from the racist people who have been coming onto our social media since this campaign started and calling us all matter of disgusting names, calling us capos, calling us Nazis, you know, all these disgusting words and calling us, you know, demanding to see the list, the member list of JALSA to dox us. You know, it's like the things that are threatening Jewish safety at CUNY are the people that are right now claiming to be speaking, you know, on our behalf and defending us. And so we felt it important to clarify this. And in our solidarity statement, we mentioned that, you know, the people who are claiming to be speaking our behalf are doing so directly against our wishes. And, you know, that if the university wants to stand with Jewish students, it will do so by standing with its students and protecting the student who is being victimized by a racist, disgusting campaign of, you know, violent Islamophobia and slander and just hatred.
Oh, thank you, Mitchell. So on the 31st of May, Eric Adams hosted a Jewish American Heritage Month celebration, and that's where he denounced Muhammad in his speech. He also said, "I am so proud to be the mayor of the Tel Aviv of America." So there's a lot there. And Nardine, you've already touched on this, but please expand on the power structures in the city and beyond that back Zionism.
Yeah, I think, you know, Fatima's speech also did a good a job of showing the power structures that back Zionism. We know that the NYPD has an office in Jerusalem, and that through the deadly exchange program, NYPD and IDF soldiers train together, U.S. military trains together. And Eric Adams, being a former NYPD officer himself, is, of course, very aware of that. And his constant pandering to Zionists make it even more obvious. Not only did he say that he's proud to be the mayor of Tel Aviv of America, he actually previously tweeted a few years ago that when he retires, he wants to retire in Palestine, like, you know, as a settler, basically. So, you know, it doesn't make him any different than the Zionist settlers that we're organizing against every single day. And it goes to show that, you know, everything that I was talking about in my speech, that Fatima was talking about, that these power structures really target and spend hundreds of thousands to target, you know, volunteer organizing to target individuals like ourselves who are simply speaking up for the freedom of our people, for the liberation of our homelands, for the end to settler colonialism. But of course, you know, that's not going to happen without getting, you know, majorly attacked by these institutions, that whether it's the cops showing up at our protests to try to stop us from protesting, which, by the way, this year, the police that came to our NECBA protests actually said that they had an order from the mayor's office to make sure that we don't use sound and that we don't march. And this is actually a divergence from the previous administration. You know, not saying that he was any better, but, you know, they would kind of like just let us do our thing and not interfere as much. So it just goes to show that Eric Adams really does want to make New York a Zionist city once again, and that these power structures are always working against us, both sides of the U.S. political establishment, Republicans and Democrats, paper like the tabloid press to the actual university chancellor and administration. You know, that's not even a sentence that you would think you would put together, that all of these people united to attack one student who spoke up for Palestinian liberation. But I think those attacks illustrate exactly what we're fighting against, and they're going to have the opposite effect of, instead of silencing us when it comes to Palestine, really exposing to the world what they're trying to silence. And when you look into it, you know, you realize the truth and you support Palestine.
Right. And Nardine and Mitchell, you know, I mean, this has attracted a lot of national scrutiny. And, you know, thinking about it, this to me, this demand that all criticism of Israel be strictly forbidden because it might make Jewish students uncomfortable, to me brings to mind the actions taken by Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida to restrict what is taught in Florida schools. In that state, a teacher who teaches a history lesson, say, about slavery or anything else that induces anxiety in a child or makes them uncomfortable with their white identity, that teacher can face criminal charges. Now, the details of what's happening in Florida and what's happening here in New York are somewhat different. But the underlying logic of repressing uncomfortable truths about oppression seems similar. What do you think? Either of you?
Yeah, I'll just, you know, quickly say that a lot of the criticism that Fatima's getting is that her speech is like indicative of critical race theory being taught at schools, which it is taught at CUNY. And that's great. Before it was an issue, we didn't even know it was an issue, you know, nationwide culture war or whatever, when we were taught that. But yeah, I think that, you know, people always talk about cancel culture and liberals being snowflakes and all these things, when the only cancel culture that I've seen actually be effective has been against Palestinians. I don't really see any of these other people getting canceled for their hateful words. I don't see people like Ron DeSantis, like even the president, the presidents of this country getting canceled for their terrible actions for sexual assault. I mean, we have Andrew Cuomo, who's a disgraced sexual harasser. He's the one who appointed every single trustee on the board of trustees that's sitting right now. So the legacy of this person who sexually harassed his workers is still the environment that we have to live in at CUNY. And nobody's canceling that. No one canceled him. His brother still has his show. Meanwhile, you know, Palestinian and adjacent students are silenced, have to go into hiding when these kinds of things happening because of the death threats, the doxing, you know, things that I don't even want to speak about on the show to not exacerbate them. But I'll give the rest of this time to Mitch to see if you have anything to add to that, Mitchell.
Yeah, I think the connection to the attacks happening against critical race theory and gender studies are really important because, you know, we're talking a lot about anti-Semitism right now, and none of this is actually about anti-Semitism. The people, the organizations, the forces, many of whom, you know, are not connected to CUNY in any way, who are, you know, using this situation to call for the defunding of CUNY and get anti-Semitism out of CUNY. You know, they've been doing that for decades. They've been targeting CUNY and leftist activism, you know, for years. And the idea that this is just a situation where they, you know, have a handhold to grab onto, which is this commencement speech that they're using to do exactly what they wanted to do already. If you talk to, you know, a lot of these people 3 weeks ago and asked them if we should defund CUNY Law School, they would have said yes, even before, you know, this commencement speech. So I think the connection to the attacks against, you know, just other forms of, you know, radical thought and radical theory, I think that is really important to make, because, you know, these attacks, despite the fact that they're sort of about anti-Semitism, they're not actually about anti-Semitism.
Right. And Mitch, I just wanted to follow up on that thought. Israel and its supporters have been pushing in international human rights bodies for criticism of the Israeli state to be deemed anti-Semitic, and they have then fought to get national governments behind this standard as well. And I mean, besides this being dishonest, can you talk about how it, in our current context, it's deeply dangerous, given that it's the far right and the MAGA movement that are currently a hotbed of virulent anti-Semitism that depicts Jews as the scheming masterminds behind efforts to inundate this country with dark-skinned immigrants who will destroy traditional white Christian America. And that's where the real anti-Semitism is.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, the goal of the movement to define anti-Semitism and to, you know, for instance, the International Holocaust Remembrance Association or Alliance's definition of anti-Semitism to, you know, adopt that in different student bodies and governmental organizations. The goal of that movement is not to do anything to protect Jewish people or do anything to, you know, defend Jewish people from anti-Semitism. The goal is to put pressure on any situation where someone opposes Zionism or criticizes Israel or opposes Israel. The goal is to make it where anytime a situation arises where someone criticizes Israel, now we're having a lengthy conversation litigating whether or not it's anti-Semitic and, you know, determining, oh, well, her statement said exactly this. Does that meet the definition? But I want to note that, you know, none of this is about anti-Semitism. The goal here is not to defend Jews. It is to create a situation that makes discussing Palestinian liberation impossible, because it's completely bombarded by people who are talking about anti-Semitism and talking about, you know, the safety of Jewish students. You know, for instance, there was a 2-year-old Palestinian recently murdered. And you know, it just feels so wrong that any talk, you know, when you bring that up, people talk about, oh, this is anti-Semitic tropes, this is blood libel, this is anti-Semitism. And so it's an effort to make it impossible to literally just explain the literal existence of Palestinians and what is being done to them.
Right. Well said, Mitchell. So both of you, Nardine and Mitchell, CUNY Law's slogan is the City University of New York Law and the Advice and the Advance of Human Needs, as Fatima said in her speech. So it's also one of the only affordable law schools in the city. Can both of you quickly talk about why you were drawn to this school and then how that relates to your fight against the university's censorship of pro-Palestinian speech? I think there's some ironies there.
Yeah, as a Palestinian, I always knew that, you know, no matter what I say, no matter how much I try to appease, you know, liberal sensibilities about Palestine, I was going to be called anti-Semitic as long as I believe that Palestine should be free, no matter what, even if I didn't, just by being Palestinian. I know that happens. So I went to CUNY Law because it branded itself as a social justice law school, as the number one public interest law school in the country. And I thought, surely, if this is not the one place that a Palestinian can thrive in a legal environment in New York City, then there is no law school other than that for me to go to. It's actually the only place that I applied to as a lifelong New Yorker and a lifelong CUNY student. I went to CUNY in undergrad as well. And, you know, in many ways, it did ring true because, as you can see, we have the support of the students. We have the support of the faculty, but the administration continues to undermine us. And then really, it's CUNY Central The Board of Trustees obviously doesn't just represent CUNY Law, but all 24 CUNY campuses, and it's them that continue to undermine us and throw us under the bus. You know, this relates to my fight against the university censorship of pro-Palestinian speech, because these are the legal tools that we're going to be learning to defend against accusations like this, to defend students who are being kicked out of their universities, who are being silenced, censored, who have their speech chilled for this. You know, we have a person at Palestine Legal Now who was actually a CUNY Law student as well, that's, you know, defending us on these claims. So, you know, this is exactly what we went to the school to fight for. And it's sad that they're not reflecting that.
Mitchell, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think CUNY Law School is this really interesting institution where I think it absolutely is an institution, and a lot of the stuff that comes with that is still there and the same as other law schools, but it has a lot of really amazing professors, really amazing students who are doing amazing work and who go on to become wonderful public defenders, tenants' rights attorneys, you know, advocates for the oppressed in all forms, and movement attorneys. And so I think, you know, the censorship of pro-Palestine speech that is happening at CUNY is not happening from the students. It's not happening from the professors. It's oftentimes happening from outside structures and from structures who, you know, I don't really think even get what makes CUNY Law CUNY Law. And, you know, that's what I want to highlight. The student body stands with Fatima. The faculty stands with Fatima. And, you know, that the censorship of pro-Palestinian speech, that is happening against the wishes of the students and the faculty.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mitchell, former member of the Jewish Law Students Association, or JALSA, and Nardine Kiswani, chair of Within Our Lifetime Palestine, for joining us here on WBAI. You can find Within Our Lifetime Palestine on Instagram at WOL Palestine. And JALSA at CUNY, CUNYJLSA. So we are going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more of the Independent News Hour. Thank you for listening.
زغرد صوت البارود شفت السما مضوية لقلوب السما رعود هذول فلسطينية لو زغرد صوت البارود شفت السما مضوية لقلوب السما رعود هذول فلسطينية في إن تهجرنا واحتلوا أرض الأجداد وبلادي مش أي بلاد أرض النخوة والأمجاد بكفي إن تهجرنا واحتلوا أرض
الأجداد. That was a Palestinian protest song. You're listening to the Independent News Hour on WBAI, unmuted, and we're still going here. And I'm also joined by my co-host, Amber Gagarian. And before we continue on, we want to encourage everybody who can do so to please support this radio station.
You can do so by calling the phone number 212-209-2950 or going online to give the number 2WBAI.org. Again, you can call 212-209-2950 or go online to give the number 2WBAI.org to give a contribution one time or recurring to WBAI listener sponsored radio, the only fully listener-sponsored station in the New York region airwaves. And that means that nobody is controlling the news that we report to you. So please help us keep that unique aspect and advantage on air. You can help do so by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or go online to give the number 2WBAI.org.
And every dollar you give goes a long way at WBAI. The station runs on a shoestring budget with a minimal staff. It's amazing that it's been able to persevere through the past few years. It's had some financial difficulties, but enough listeners like yourself have stood with this station, have picked up that phone and called 212-209-2950 or gone online to give number two WBAI.org. We need you to do that again. We had a short fund drive the past couple of weeks, but if you didn't give during that fund drive, well, now's a great time to give. 212-209-2950. You get to hear voices like we just heard, independent voices from important social movements here in the city, we heard from Nurdin Kazmani and from Mitchell from the Jewish Law Students Association. At CUNY and Nermeen within our lifetime Palestine. And in our next segment in a minute, we're going to hear from a labor organizer with a really important group, the Emergency Worker Organizing Committee. But one more time, 212-209-2950 or give number 2WBAI.org. And so we will pivot here and talk about labor organizing in New York City. Labor unions, according to all public opinion surveys we're seeing, are more popular than any time they've been in more than 50 years, close to 70% public support. And among young people, that support approaches 80%. But it's one thing to support the idea of labor unions or belonging to a labor union. It's another thing to get organized and to be able to benefit from the power that comes with belonging to a union and having a union. And one group that's really playing a fascinating role at this moment is the Emergency Worker Organizing Committee, or EWOC. It started during the pandemic as a hotline for essential workers to call that were, having all sorts of challenges at work and were trying to figure out what to do. And join us today to talk about what EWOC is up to, because they continue to be very active, is Samuel Fleischman. He's an organizer with the EWOC here in New York City. But Samuel, welcome to WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hi, John. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Can you just elaborate a little bit more about EWOC's origins and what it is and what is the need that it has been meeting?
Sure. So EWOC started in the midst of the pandemic in early 2020. It basically started very naturally, organically. There was a lot of organizers on the left labor movement and people, actually a lot of people were working on the end of the Bernie Sanders campaign. And naturally, a lot of these people were getting a huge influx of messages and DMs from workers, a lot of frontline and essential workers asking for support because they were dealing with lack of PPE equipment, unsafe working conditions, and they didn't know what to do. So it sort of happened you know, in a rapid response organic moment that a bunch of smart people got together and basically created like a guest support form, like a hotline for if you are having issues at your workplace, you can contact us and we'll get back to you within 48 hours and we'll sort of, you know, figure out the best response for your working situation and help you build power in your workplace. So that's how it initially started. And then, you know, it just sort of, it met the moment. I think we've all seen in the last 2 to 3 years that there's been this huge uptick in labor upsurge, as they call it, workers, being upset about their working conditions and wanting to make a change and wanting to have voice and respect in their workplace, and not really knowing, where to go, not having the resources, or the experience to know about labor law or their rights or sort of the fundamentals of organizing and how to, you know, build collective power and change their workplace. You know, the labor organizing movement has sort of been on a downward trend for several decades. So, a lot of, you know, union locals, if you go to their website, for instance, it's like a website from 1998 and they, you know, there's no contact information for an organizer. There's definitely no like easy to fill out get support form. So, workers were sort of left without the resources and experts sort of to help them along in their journey. And so that's the sort of role that EWOC played. And we've been playing that role since the pandemic, and it's really grown out of, that era of sort of virtual organizing and remote organizing to where we are now with people like me and a group of folks, who are starting EWOC chapters around the country and providing on the ground sort of physical, organizing support for workers.
So, Sam, EWOC offers a variety of support and resources to workers who are disgruntled or want to organize at their job. Everything from, you know, here's how you organize a single issue campaign. Maybe you're not ready to organize a full union, but you can do a single issue campaign around a pay raise or whatever it is. And then also you might suggest somebody to join an already, or you might, you know, help someone join, try to join an already established union, having you know, a union vote at their workplace and then join an already established union, or they might start their own independent union like we see with Trader Joe's workers, with Amazon workers, et cetera. So there's a lot of working options there. Does working with EWOC give you more freedom as an organizer than it would to work at a more entrenched bureaucratic union? And can you just talk about that?
It definitely does. I think, you know, at the end of the day, if you think about one of the messages you want to sort of say as a worker, right? Or if you're talking to workers, is that, you know, the union is the workers. So I think over time we've sort of forgotten that the power of organized workers, you know, comes from collective action and a group of people getting together and having common interests and common goals and fighting together. So if we hold that, you know, true, then, you know, EWOC is a sort of vehicle to allow workers that are already acting like a union, even if they haven't been certified, you know, by the NLRB or taken certain legal steps, they're acting like a union. And EWOC has the freedom to sort of advise them, and offer support, whether it's legal support, research requests and research support or media spokes prep, a host of things. It's all in the best interest of those workers. And that's not to say that, you know, lots of workers, in campaigns we've supported end up, affiliating with unions. Some have started their own independent unions. And at the end of the day, whether it's your own union or you're joining a union local, if you're keeping sort of that idea that, you know, we as the workers are the union and we can sort of decide for ourselves as rank and file workers, what we want our future to be, then the sky's the limit, really. So yeah, EWOC, doesn't have relationships, with any, you know, unions. Some unions have like worker centers that are affiliated with them. For us, it's really about, what's best for the workers, and that freedom, allows us to sort of like offer different advice or different pathways that, you know, other unions might not be able to offer. So, yeah.
Right. And, EWOC is, currently has 250 active union organizing campaigns going on nationwide, which is incredibly impressive. But can you tell us more about some of the successful union organizing efforts that EWOC has led here in New York?
Sure, I'd love to. So funny enough, we're actually doing, putting on our first in-person training for EWOC in New York in June in the next few Saturdays. And we're having some workers come who've been supported by EWOC and successfully organized and successfully formed unions coming to speak. So, for instance, there's the Vital Climbing Gym Union. So this is a smaller chain of climbing gyms in the city, some in Brooklyn, some uptown in Manhattan. And a worker got in touch with us over a year ago at the uptown location and was connected with one of our volunteer organizers. And basically, through the process of them learning about union organizing and building an organizing committee and talking to all their coworkers about their issues and building alignment, they successfully formed a union. And with Workers United, which is a affiliate of SEIU, and they won their election, and that was great. And actually now they've gone on to file another election with a second climbing gym location. So you really see the power of this growing, because when it's led by workers and it's workers who have the tools and know-how to organize, it makes it so much easier for them to talk to workers at a different location if it's a chain, because they've gone through those experiences. In this case, you know, these climbing gym workers know the ins and outs of what that workplace is like, what the struggles are, and it makes it a lot more conducive to successful organizing. So that was successful. We've also, this is also very recently, but the first standalone New York City pizzeria is unionizing. And they actually, it's Barbacino Pizzeria in Crown Heights, and they just filed for their union election about 2 weeks ago. And they're a really great group of workers. I would tell everyone here, you can go on Jacobin website or Jacobin magazine, and there's a great article written by Ops Press about their organizing journey and their story and how they were able to successfully organize. So, I want to shout out just two more, because, and I could keep going, sure. But there's also this great online therapist group for the National Eating Disorder Alliance, the NEDA Helpline Associates Union. And the worker actually leading that campaign had contacted Zoran Mandami's office in Queens last year with a sort of issue about how could they organize their workplace.
And Zoran is a socialist and an assembly member from Queens, represents a district out there, correct?
Yes, correct. So their team sort of has, you know, heard and knows about EWOC now. So she was able to connect with another EWOC volunteer organizer. And the same thing, you know, over time was able to organize her coworkers, and they filed for an election. But I just want to point out, just, you know, because this is a more complex story and people can also Google this, that they successfully filed for an election and won. And then the employer, these were online, you know, therapists, they fired all of the therapists and replaced them with a chatbot. So I just want people to think about sort of what lengths employers will go to sort of protect their profits and how they sort of will disregard workers.
And that was here in New York that they replaced the workers with the chatbot?
Yeah, that was here in New York. And
and that's not, because there was also these, sorry to interrupt, but I have to draw this connection briefly. There was also an eating disorder helpline that fired its staff when they said they were going to unionize and transition to chatbot. And then within like 2 weeks, they had to take down the chatbot because there was such a slew of terrible responses. But I guess this is a widespread issue because these are different instances. So continue. Thank you.
Yeah, right. When has a chatbot ever had to actually deal with an eating disorder?
Yeah, it just sort of goes to show that, you know, it's for workers to keep in mind too, you know, because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening in right now, is that, you know, your employer will show their true colors when put to the to the iron, you know, when faced with pressure, they'll show that they, you know, they care about maintaining the status quo, maintaining their profits, because there's no way that a chatbot could do what a human does and sort of, you know, talking to another human being about their experiences. So, those are a couple stories. I could go on. You know, Ewok has also been sort of helping the Trader Joe's workers and supporting some campaigns in the city. There's a very unfortunate union election earlier this year where Trader Joe's workers filed at the Essex store in Lower Manhattan, and they actually tied. So they tied their election 76-76. It would have been the first Trader Joe's United, so that's the independent union, in New York City. It would have been one of the first new grocery stores to unionize in the city in a long time. It's really hard to organize a shop that big. And then some weird, you know, some people know this too. In a tie, the tie goes to the employer. It's just
right.
A rule.
Yeah, we have a story about that in our current print edition. A tough loss and Amba, I know you reported on that story, but we will have to go here in another minute or so. So, sure. Sam, can you tell us a little bit more about these trainings that are going to be held at the People's Forum by Ewok over the next two Saturdays? What y'all are going to cover in these trainings, and how people can get involved if they want to join?
Sure. So, if you go to learn more about the trainings, you can go to, the Organized Workers or Ewok, Twitter account, and there'll be some posts about that. Maybe afterwards, if there's a way to follow up with some links on the trainings themselves. But yes, they're going to be at the People's Forum this Saturday and the next Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1:30. So, this is a cornerstone of Ewok's organizing model. We hold these trainings online now six times a year, and we've helped train thousands of workers on sort of the organizing fundamentals. And we're really excited to now do this in person, because in-person organizing and getting to meet people, build relationship is really powerful. So the Ewok training is split into essentially four parts, we basically run you through sort of the A to Z of how to build rank and file power at workplace. How to build towards collective action, whether that's a petition or whether that's filing for a union election. It's really laying the groundwork for like what's the best keys to success for organizing. And the way we do it is we bring together some really great volunteer Ewok organizers, people who've had multiple successful campaigns and then we pair them with workers who've also organized successfully. So all the campaigns I just talked about, including and in addition more, workers will be there sort of talking through the content, talking about their experience and really breaking down in a simple way. Cause you know, sometimes this gets complicated and there's words people don't understand. And we try and make it a very popular education style about, you know, this is really at the end of the day about like how you can build community at your workplace, how you talk to your coworkers about sensitive issues, and how you sort of get over a lot of real fears and anxieties and struggles that workers have to deal with when they start to organize. So, it's broken down into four parts and then.
Right. We have to wrap up here, but,
okay.
Yeah. So, Samuel Fleischman, organizer with Emergency Worker Organizing Committee, thank you so much for joining us this evening on WBAI Radio.
Appreciate it, John and Embo.
Thank you.
Right. So we have to go here in a moment, but I just want to encourage everybody to stay on 99.5 FM at the top of the hour. We'll have the half-hour edition of Democracy Now! Followed by Interpersonal Update with Harriet Fraud. And then there will be a special show from 7 to 9 p.m. And then at from 9 to 10, Cat Radio Cafe and The Sweet Spot from 10 to 12 p.m. So more great public affairs programming followed by music programming later this evening, all here on WBAI 99.5 FM. And Amba, what's our musical outro going to be this evening?
We're going to hear Générique by Miles Davis, which was for a soundtrack that he made for the 1958 French film Elevator to the Gallows.
WBAI's 2023 local station board election is here, and we invite you to participate. Join or renew your membership by June 30th to vote or run as a candidate. Make a minimum donation of $25 by calling 212-209-2950 or visit wbai.wedidit.it to become a BAI buddy today. Make sure to give your email to receive your e-ballot. For more information, visit elections.pacifica.org. There you will find the voter guide, candidate nomination package, and nominator registration. Candidate nomination packets must be completed by June 30th. Any questions or concerns? Contact the Pacifica Radio National Election Supervisor by emailing nes@pacifica.org or leaving a voicemail on 213-635-9363. Thanks very much. It's 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York, and online at WBAI.org.
This is WBAI, and this is Fred Eagle Smith for WBAI in New York. Stick it in your ear.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Hi, this is Jerry Stiller. You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Where are my keys? Anybody see my keys? Who took my keys?
$0.33 a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that 33 cents a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as 33 cents a day, $10 a month, you can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card and other goodies. Sign up online. Go to WBAI.org and click on donate. All the details are right there. The WBAI buddy. Be one today.
Invisible.
Hush. Not so loud.
Invisible.
Shh.
I am.
Well, WBAI's signal 99.5 FM is down for repair at the site of our transmitter. WBAI is now streaming a fabulous, riveting Pacifica Radio production of Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison.
Lawrence Fishburne kicks off the novel.
That's Invisible Man, streaming on WBAI.org.
this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Good morning, and thank you so much for tuning in.